said that there are no specific targets for safety. the only thing that is there is a relationship between transport and poverty. It's a very serious statement, transport and poverty. but nevertheless, ladies and gentlemen, we did hear the presentation very clear, loud and clear, with some examples or parables in between. Now, I would allow members to raise their questions to the team through the DG and expect some responses thereof. Are there members who would like to have some questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Ollis, Mamo Dlakude, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got four questions, but I only have one round, so if I can make the four, then we'll be finished once. One shot. My first question is, page doesn't have a number, the one that says major threat. We've given the sample fatalities for a four-year cycle. Could we have the figures for the next 2 years, 2010-2011 and 2011-2012, because of course 2012 is finished. These are assumed financial years, so we've passed that date already. At least one, maybe two more years' figures. Secondly, Chairperson, this is not a political point, this is a service delivery point. I feel quite sort of depressed when I see the numbers. I mean, this organization was founded in 2005, according to this document. And I've only been here since, like, February. But I'm quite depressed, you know, when I sit and see this report, because we've been working on this entity from 2005 until now. And as the acting CEO tells us, the situation is not improving. From 2005 until now is 7 years. And in 7 years, the figures are the same. We're still at 14,000 deaths. And it's good that he's honest, because, you know, we can't deal with rumors and stories. It's much better to know what the facts are. And I'm glad that we have the actual facts here. But it's quite depressing. So, you know, my second point is an observation that I don't think we're getting anywhere with road safety. I really don't think we're getting anywhere. And I think we need to do something to change that, because, you know, they say that if you do the same thing over and over again and you expect different results, then you're crazy. And we don't want to be crazy. We want to change what we're doing so that we can get different results. Because if we carry on doing what we've been doing since 2005, next year's going to be another 14,000 people dead. Maybe our cousin or our mother or somebody. It's not okay. My third point is, when you talk to, you know, people in the transport industry, they say that this road safety strategy of the UN, that we have done very little practically to implement the points that the UN made. I think it's in the second or third year of running now, the second year. But we still haven't completed the project for the first year. And the second year ones, we have run away with us again, and I can see people nodding here from the department. So we've not done it. It's a nice piece of paper that acknowledges the UN's projects and targets, but what did we do about safety belts in the safety belt year? What did we actually do? What in the year of when we're supposed to deal with drunk driving, what is the project? How are we going to get drunk drivers off the road in that year? I mean, otherwise to present to the portfolio committee this page and say, you know, the UN has this program, well, I mean, that's pointless. Then we might as well go drink more tea. We need to know what is the action steps on the road that is going to be done to achieve the UN targets if we're going to work with this program. Aligned with that, the practical steps, this safe systems approach. I mean, it talks about safer vehicles. It talks about enforcing the road rules, and the one that doesn't specifically mention, but which the CEO has mentioned very clearly a number of times, is the relationship between alcohol and deaths. So we've got those three things. We've got vehicles that are not safe, we've got alcohol, and we've got the rules of the road. If we just took the five worst roads in South Africa, he mentioned the R61 in Eastern Cape. I know the Mulatto Road is a dangerous one. I'm not sure what the top five are, but what are we doing on those specific roads every week, every month, every year to reduce those deaths? If there's an engineering problem, like maybe fences on the side of the road are not there, so drunk people and children and goats run across that particular road in a rural area, have we contacted SANRAL and the provincial authority in Eastern Cape, for example, to say, what fences are you going to put up to stop these deaths? You know, there's some worst case scenarios, Chairperson, and I would like to know that we've gone to the Eastern Cape Provincial Roads Department or the Provincial Transport Department, said, you need to put a fence here. People are dying on this section of the R61 every year. You need to put a fence here to stop people wandering onto this road. You need to put scholar patrol at this point, over here, at this corner and that corner. You need specifics. What are we, this is a very high level presentation, but the results are not there. So I think this committee needs to dig into this more and say to RTMC, we need to know in detail, what are you doing? I don't know what the measurement is. Perhaps, Chairperson, you want to suggest we want a report on the five worst roads and interventions that are being put in place now for to solve it all. 10 worst roads, I don't know, I'm not dictating, you know, the thing, but I'm just suggesting that we need to get more practical about these things. On the worst roads in South Africa, my question to the RTMC is, what specific practical steps are taken on the five worst roads to change this? We know about the financial problem at the RTMC. The financial problem is that 200 million debt. Until we deal with that, there's going to be ongoing financial problems. And that's a fight between Treasury and the RTMC, and I don't even know what to say about that, because what must this committee say? I don't know. Treasury won't write it off. RTMC doesn't have the money, therefore it's not ever going to come right unless there's an agreement struck to deal with that debt. It's going to go on forever. I think that's enough. If I can just make my questions specifically clear, can we have the data for those 2011, 2012 years of how many deaths? If we can know on the five worst roads in South Africa what interventions have been put in place and are being put in place now to reduce them, the practical steps. Just a final point, if they could just tell me how many registered driver's licenses are there in the country. So that I just want to try and understand, I'm new to this portfolio committee, I want to understand how many people are licensed to drive a car in South Africa. Thank you. I'll rest there. I don't have further questions. I'm one. I didn't drive mine. I had to do a test.
Thank you very much for those questions.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, let me thank the acting CEO and the DG for the presentation. I don't have a questions per se, but I just want to refresh our minds, as some of us are new in this committee, that RTMC, as it was established in 2005, it was an ICU. It was in ICU because they didn't have the necessary support that they needed to execute their duties. That's number one. Then, number two, DG, I remember many times that we were talking about this, the National Road Traffic Act, that it needs to be looked into so that it allows the RTMC to execute its constitutional mandate. I don't know as to how far are you as a department on that one. because it's a serious challenge. I look also into the challenges and threats. We know that as the RTMC was in an ICU for a long time, then the acting CEO came along with his team. They managed to take that out of the ICU and out of the hospital. That's why today we have these better reports that they are given to us. And also, as a portfolio committee, they presented their turnaround strategy, of which we are happy about. The only challenges that I hear is that the RTMC is not assisted with the necessary resources so that it can be able to execute its mandate. So what I'm asking DG here, I remember in our budget vote, we also said that the RTMC be given the necessary resources, because there is nothing that you can do without money. You really, you can have many people, good teams. Now, in the presentation, the acting CEO also mentioned that we have lost one of the trained members in Germany, one of them. We lost him to private sector. Why is that? It's because they don't have the necessary resources, and they are not, you know, if you don't have the tools of trade, you are not motivated to do your work. You need to get the necessary tools so that you can be able to execute your mandate. You can see even on the statistics that they are giving us. The statistics that they are giving us of the road fatalities every day, every year. They have programs, but they are unable to carry out those programs through because there is no money. What do we expect them to come to the portfolio committee and report? They'll give us the report that they are giving us and the challenges that they are having. So I'm asking, why can't they be given the necessary resources? Because that is what we asked for in our budget vote, that they get the necessary resources to do their job. Also on fraud and corruption, I agree with you. And that is not the RTMC's doing. It's all the traffic officials that are there in the country. Everywhere is done. I'm from Mpumalanga. The N4 also have many road fatalities every day. Not a single day that you Leo Shona ilogi N4 ingana my accidents. They are there every day. These unroadworthy vehicles, they come from Gauteng to Mozambique, Northwest to Mozambique, Free State to Mozambique. And when you see these vehicles on the road, you'll think that, oh, this person is from the Free State. Maybe he's visiting Mpumalanga or Mozambique. No, those people are from Mozambique or Swaziland. You can see they are driving on the roads, of which there is something that needs to be done on those provinces, the three provinces that I've mentioned. You can see that, oh, these people use money to get their licenses, even to license their vehicles, because you can see from outside that this vehicle is not roadworthy. And they drive through from Gauteng down to Mozambique. How do you think they are doing that? The answer is one: corruption. They are bribing everyone from Gauteng to Mpumalanga or to Mozambique. That's how they manage to go. And they are the most sources of accidents on our roads every day, because they carry these big loads of, I don't know. And also on the trucks, the heavy vehicles, I agree with you. They destroy our roads while they pay less. Fortunately, I used to work for the Department of Transport in Mpumalanga. I was dealing with abnormal roads, abnormal trucks. I know how much they pay for a year. Peanuts. Yet, if they are driving on the same road for a month, you'll see the difference on the road. So I think we need to also to relook into this one, because we cannot allow, yes, I'm happy that industry also is supporting RTMC, but I think we need to do more. We need to take these heavy vehicles off our roads, because in all the accidents that are happening on our roads, the abnormal trucks are there, are involved. You can see these abnormal trucks involved in an accident where 13 cars are crashed by this one. So this is how it's happening in our country. We cannot blame the RTMC. We must make sure that we support those entities that are out there to help us reduce the road fatalities. If it was my making, the 14 billion rands that goes to road accident fund is every year, I would say that the 14 billion rands must come to RTMC so that they can be able to execute their duties and also to roll out their programs so that we can measure them against those things. But now there is nothing that we can measure them against because they don't have the necessary resources. So thanks for this. I'm quite happy about the presentation, but I also feel with you, acting CEO, together with the department, the frustration that you are facing due to lack of resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Tabumbel. The floor is yours. Welcome back.
No, thanks, Chair. You know, man, I'm a politician. You see, if Collins was in my field and his team, I could have said, if I'm not given resources, I could have said and concluded that perhaps I'm set to fail. Because there can be no other conclusion that one can draw. Because every program has got financial aspect, no financial feature attached to it. There's no way you can execute any mandate without resources. And you would see that indeed this entity doesn't have resources, even in its own marketing. You know, the only time I see RTMC is when I'm relaxed at home and there's an accident on the road. Mm. And there's one gentleman who has become a celebrity these days. It's quite a sad situation. And indeed, the issue of resources, honestly, need to be given attention. I think it's about time. If we're serious about saving the lives of our people and improving, curbing road fatalities on our roads, indeed we need to begin to entertain this matter on a more serious level. Well, other than the question that I would want to pose would be, other than perhaps the drunken driving and stuff like that, generally other than the human factor, are you saying, acting CEO, that our roads are well engineered? Because largely, you're saying in the main majority of cases of this road accident, it's largely because of human error. The other question perhaps I would like to pose, in your interaction, that is in relation with 24/7 shift system, in your interaction and engagement with your provincial colleagues, in your engagement with them around this issue of 24/7 shift system, what are the reasons that they are forwarding for them not implementing this particular shift system that you said it's only implemented in the Western Cape? I would like to hear what are the reasons in the main for them failing to implement. About this sad situation of having 17 officers on the road, to have to police about 750,000 kilometers. Indeed, it's a sad situation. It's a sad situation in the sense that we know that unemployment is a serious issue in this country, and we make noise about it in different forums. But here is a need. We need officers on our roads, visible at all times. And here are possibilities for our people to be employed, but we're doing nothing about it. It's quite sad indeed. I think for now I will pause at that, Chair. Thank you.
17,000. This will be the 750,000. Thank you, Honorable Member Mbele. My friend. My friend. There's only one friend of mine here.
First time you call me that, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, you are recognized. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, just two questions. The 750,000 kilometers of roads that have to be trolled by the 17,000 officers, traffic officers. I mean, everyone has said how much of a challenge that is. You work it out, it's just over 40 kilometers per officer each. And that doesn't seem like a lot to me. Again, so I'm just a bookkeeper and an accountant, so I love dividing figures into other things.
How many officers and how many kilometers?
Well, in the presentation, I think it said 750,000 kilometers of roads, is that correct?
Yeah.
And only 17,000 traffic officers look after them. It's just over 40 kilometers per traffic officer, which is not a lot.
Yeah.
So what have I missed? Because it seems as if that's actually quite a high ratio, unless perhaps you have an international benchmark that says to effectively police the roads, you need to have no more than, say, for example, 10 or 15 kilometers per traffic officer. So just some clarity on that. And then to echo what my colleague said, I'd just like to drill down a little bit deeper. The number of fatalities over the 4 years that have been identified in the presentation, excluding the last couple of years, stuck around 13 to 15,000. Within those national statistics, are there any provinces that you've found are actually getting a lot worse? In other words, there's specific hotspot provinces where perhaps for whatever reason it's even worse than the national trend, and by the same token, are there any provinces that perhaps have got a little bit better than the national average? If you wouldn't mind just clarifying that, and that might help us understand if there's contributory factors to either greater safety or greater lack of safety. Thank you, Chairperson. Acting Chairperson, my friend.
Today, I'm acting, just like my CEO is acting. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I think that maybe, you know, as you were speaking about the best practices, I was just thinking aloud, I wonder if we delved into the Arab lands, Arab states, to check how do they keep this issue of the, how do they deal with the issue of corruption in those Arab states.
not in
the best practice, you know? You know, we need to explore. All right, but I think it's food for thought, because this thing is very serious, the issue of corruption. And yet we are always establishing these agencies that are dealing with corruption, and to no success. Well, on a serious note, I'm not saying let's still look at that end, but really, I'm sure we are missing something deep down in our systems in dealing with corruption. You put this agency, you put this system, but it seems to me it does not bear fruits. Instead, the situation is getting worse than before on the issue of the anti-corruption. The second matter, I just want to commend those provinces that seems to be on top of the issues, like the Western Cape. I mean, where there is due, we need to give credit. And where there are those that are not pulling along, we need to be a little bit tougher. And once again, I'm thinking just aloud whether I will put this in our committee meeting, whether we can't make an oversight to our counterparts in the various provinces to deal with managerial issues in the spending patterns, in their priorities, and so on. before going to the roads, actually, because you need first to look at your system as the committee to our counterparts, whether they are doing what they're supposed to do. We're not going there as big brothers and young brothers, but as equal partners who are in the same boat to get things right. I think we'll have to think aloud on those matters of a visit to the various provinces, especially those that are performing very bad or who are having serious challenges when it comes to this program, so that we bring back a feedback even to the RTMC. Maybe they are not also giving the whole story, as we might divert a little bit and give them some feedback on the matter. Equally with this issue of the capacity, in as far as the HR is concerned. Mine also, the other one that I wanted to check with, and I think the proposal that the acting CEO was putting forward around the most vulnerable road users, the 20 kilometers per hour rather than the 60, I know it, you just pass on that, but it's a very serious matter which we need to look into that, whether we cannot reduce that speed limit from 50 or 60 to 20, especially where there are schools close nearby the road on the heavy traffic. So I think we'll have to talk about it a little bit at our own meeting, so that we make a firm proposal if he wants that to be done, so that we ponder with the law on those issues, or with the Act. The question of the 38% based on the target. Maybe the CEO would have to tell us at some point in time which are those provinces that are not performing when you are having this national target. I'll be afraid that it will be a particular province that is performing over others, and others are not doing that. That is why I'm tempted to say we need to go have those oversight visits also as a committee to check why are these officials not doing their little bit in bringing up the statistics and to reduce the fatalities on the roads. Because 38% is quite very low when you translate that into figures. We need to check on that, ladies and gentlemen. He must give us that breakdown. Which are those provinces? I must also commend the Western Cape Way Bridge, the one that is close by Swellendam. You know, there's a way bridge there. I normally stop there when I do travel. Go there as an ordinary citizen, just to check how they do it. Almost every truck that passed by there, it is being stopped at that way bridge. Almost every truck, you know. I'm not saying it is better off than other provinces. I know also in the Eastern Cape, the N2, the Kinkelbos, that one, also they do that, because we normally visit those way bridges during our constituency, just to check. But what is lacking in some of them, at night you don't find traffic officers in certain way bridges, because also the one across the Kai in Tata, when you enter it, there is also another way bridge there. So I'm saying we need to make a follow-up on this matter, but I must say I'm a bit impressed by that. Well, this issue of traffic officers, their absence at night is really of a challenge. One officer, when I was traffic officer, I was talking to him informally, because they don't know where we're working. I say, hey, what about having traffic officers? I'm asking from a traffic officer, what about having traffic officers at night? He says, yay, bro, they will shoot you at night, these chefs, because there are many sources around these areas. So you are afraid, and you are not so trained. He said, hey, no, man. I mean, police are working 24-7. And other agencies, what about themselves? Hey, it's not easy. Maybe you have to be trained and to be reorientated. But I'm just raising this matter of the 24-7. It's a serious matter that needs to be looked into by the department. Otherwise, we will not win the battle. But over and above is the attitude. You know, it's in the mind of South Africans. You can put as many policemen or traffic officers on the road, but I think the attitude of each and every citizen who is a driver, having a valid driver's license, we need to find a way of changing that type of an attitude, so that our people have got passion and understand that when you are behind a vehicle, you are driving your life also, and somebody's life. So I think this issue of continuing educating our people, public education, as we are also going towards the festive spring tomorrow and so on, going towards the festive season, our education campaign should be much more stronger from now and sustain that beyond the festive season. Otherwise, ladies and gentlemen, I think I've raised my few issues. It's not concerns, but also complimenting here and there. Can the department maybe respond to those few questions, starting with the ones of Mr. Ollis? He had about four, initially had three, but ended up with four questions. Thank you so much, DJ, and your team.
All right. I think the one that I have here are 9-10 figures. I'll get to you the 10-11 figures. The 9-10 figures are 13,852. So barring around, and I'll get you the 10-11 figures, but they are almost around the same number. We are not getting anywhere. And that's a statement that was made by the Honorable Member, to say we are not getting anywhere. And indeed, we agree with you, we are not getting anywhere. When we took over in 2010, especially when I assumed the reins there, the RTMC in 2010, it had been that the budget of the RTMC at the time, before I arrived, was 180 million. What then happened is that the management at the time, because of certain things, did not apply for a budget, and Treasury then gave them a budget of 73 million. And that's how we moved from 180 to 70 million. So that's the beginning of how our financial problems started. It is not, I mean, you would expect that as we roll out more programs, there would have been more money being given, but what has happened is that we moved from 180 to 73. And the question that we have always asked is whether there is any scientific determination of how people arrive at funding an organization of our size. Okay, that's the first thing. We have done very little in the years. Safety belts, drunk driving, and all that, to say what were the action steps. And the first thing that we did was to say, how do you go back to basics? In a very way that does not need a lot of money and all that, how do you best use the resources you have at your disposal to do the very best you can? We had discovered that some of these metros had used traffic law enforcement as a revenue generation mechanism. One of the metros had about 4,000, I think, officers. But the number of infringements that were issued by a traffic officer who was standing by the side of the road and actually physically stops you and gives you that thing, as a percentage of the total, was less than 3%. So you were sitting there with, frankly speaking, cameramen who were just sitting there taking pictures. So we had to go back and say, in the National Rolling Enforcement Plan, we want you to physically stop and check. Because with a camera, you're not going to see an unlicensed driver. You're not going to see a drunk driver. You're not going to see an unroadworthy vehicle. So for us, we started there. We are saying, let's do the best with what we have. Safety belts, it's a thing that we have said. In safety belts, we said to people, you must know that the law says if you're not wearing a safety belt in a car, whether you're a back seat somebody or you're sitting in the front row, it's still the same.
So it must be emphasized. As I'm saying, the drunk driving part, we are doing a lot on drunk driving, and that's why we are setting targets to say 10,000 screenings every month. But as I said, the setback had been much more on the evidential that was being used. Now that we have got to use draw blood method, if this thing goes to the lab, it takes another 3 to 6 months for it to come back. Whereas we could do it with an evidential just taking you there and coming there, we would have known the results. So those are the things that for us become a problem. It's a UN target, yes. It's a target for us, that's why in South Africa we said, instead of talking about 2020, we should be talking about 2015. But resources are an important part of what we need to do. You talk about 750,000 kilometers and 17,000. You talk about probably 8.9 million drivers that we must police, with about 10 million cars that are on our roads at any given point in time. And to the honorable member that was asking about 40 kilometers per traffic officer. Just take an example where something happens within that space, and let's firstly say that must be for 24 hours. So in South Africa, someone must work for 8 hours, so that's the first thing. So you must understand that then it means that 8 hours, then there's 16 hours left where there won't be any policemen there. Safe to say that in the 40 kilometers. Now 40 kilometers is quite a stretch. It's a stretch of a road that is quite big. And the other thing is about visibility. Visibility and what we call moving violations, where people just overtake where it's not safe to do so. And that's where we have seen most of our people die. And I think that we are not resourced from a point of view of the people, but from a point of view of also the technology that does some of those things. We are not resourced properly, and we need to be resourced. The same system approach, the specifics of what needs to be done. Specifics are there. We are there. We've got all these programs. But they are highly, highly underfunded, all these programs. We have brought the cost to economy in the previous meeting. 306 billion a year that accidents cost South Africa. Now we have got 84 million to solve that problem. If we add all the budgets of all the municipalities and everybody else, we'll come to about a billion, trying to solve a 306 billion problem. I think, like I said, there is a need that we must emphasize the need. And there is a need to focus on prevention. Because if we are not saying that, we must also say to the guys that deal with HIV and AIDS, no condoms program, just feed them antiretrovirals. I don't know whether that will work. But it's something that we are telling ourselves, that we are saying cure is better than prevention. There is prevention is better than cure, and we must focus on this preventative part, which is why we are also clear about this issue about corruption. Because if we don't prevent corruption, there's absolutely no way in which you can actually put 100, maybe 200,000 of these officers on the road. If just 10% of them are corrupt and people go through that, you are still going to find the same problem. So, which is why we are saying we need a holistic approach of how we deal with these issues. There is an issue about, other than the human factor, are our roads well engineered? No, they are not. Most of our people die on national roads. They don't die on the secondary roads that people say, no, there's a pothole there. The really well-maintained roads kill most of our people. Now, where do they kill most of our people? The one part we have dealt with, they kill them after 10, because those roads just happen to be the ones that are mostly provincial and national roads, and therefore there's no one. Now, there's no one there. Yeah, around after 10 o'clock. Now, if you take the N3, let's take the N1, which I know very well. After Kranskop, going north, the median has been removed. That strip in between that moves the two platforms. The engineers have decided, based on costs again, to move these platforms together and have people traveling in 120 kilometers per hour at different directions. The only thing that separates the demarcation is the two traffic moving in different directions is a piece of paint. That is probably about 100 millimeters. Now, at night, if you travel on that, at that speed, chances of you veering off and getting into the traffic of the in the different direction are very high. And coincidentally, that's exactly where most of our people are dying. So we have engineered ourselves into that space because of costs. So you are seeing it. So that's why I'm saying engineering is also part of the issues that we are dealing with. Brutal side impact and head-on collisions at cross junctions is some of the things that kill our people. Everywhere else in the world, we are seeming to be fascinated a lot with robots. But robots are not the safest things of dealing with those things. Roundabouts all over the world are what has been brought into show. I mean, that technology is working. I mean, that is working very well. It's not technology, but it's an old way. But roundabouts are the actually safest things that we must be implementing from an engineering point of view. Headpin bends all over the world have been banned. In South Africa, they are done because for some reason it costs them less to have a sharp bend than a longer one. So we are having all those problems. And we have seen some of them where you will see you are on the speed lane and someone is approaching from the right-hand side. And there is an on-ramp right there. And that also is a very big problem. And we have engineered ourselves into some of those problems. So it's not only the issue around the human element and the factor is big, but there are other engineering issues that we are doing. In the interaction of the 24/7 with our people, what are they crying about? Resources. They'll tell you, we don't have overtime. We don't have allowances. So if you want to move to these people to be what is called a workforce that works odd hours, you need to pay them allowances and all those things that substitute overtime. People don't have that. So there is no resource. And they also cry about the safety and everything, but we are saying no. But I mean, we haven't seen a lot of people or a lot of police people or traffic officers being killed in the Western Cape, and they've implemented it. People are saying resources. We need cars, we need this, we need heavy artillery weapons and all those things that people would have. And there is an issue about provinces, which provinces are supportive or which ones have got. We have got serious problems. I'll tell you, when we did this audit, Free State has flatly refused for us to come and audit them. They just say, the guy says, we don't get a budget from you, so we don't know what you are trying to audit here. And as a result, they are not part of the, out of the 38% that I'm talking about, is the 38% on average of all the provinces, the 8 provinces. Free State refused to be audited. For what reason, we do not know. Now, as the RTMC, we don't have power to tell them, we shall audit you. So we just decided we are going to leave them. What has changed? I mean, for some reason, over the past years, KZN seemed to be the province that keeps on killing most people. We suspect, when we look at our data, we suspect that is because of the engineering factor, because law enforcement there is done. And I think it has got to a point where it's becoming a blunt tool and there's other things, but I think it's not that, I mean, there is a bit of engineering aspect that needs to be done in that area, and we see a lot of pedestrians also dying as a result. Eastern Cape, Western Cape has reduced, the number in Western Cape has reduced, and I think the 24/7 is starting to show, and we're saying to people, that's one of the things that they've done quite successfully there, which is the issue about working 24/7 and being able to be there. People usually drink at night, and that's when you're going to find drunk drivers and that. You were asking about what happens in the Arab states. No, but I'll tell you one thing about South Africa. If some clever guy wanted to do something, he wouldn't, if he wanted to take you out, he wouldn't take a gun and go and shoot you. Because that would be murder. If he took a car and just ran you over and killed you, he would have derived the same purpose, but that would be culpable homicide and he's likely to walk away. So we have trivialized life that is lost on the road to a point where it doesn't really matter. Okay, so the way in which South Africans look at road crimes, they have made them so petty that even stealing a sweet is much more better than killing someone, because theft is seen as bigger than someone who would have killed someone on the road. So for us, there is therefore a need as a society to look at those things and say, have they helped us in dealing with them? I mean, every time you talk about, like now, we are talking about this program called Zoza Retest, where we are saying, once we have found you guilty of drinking and driving, reckless and negligent and all that, we are going to subject you to a test. You are going to retest again for your learners. The uproar is bigger than when people die, for some reason. So that's why we are saying there is a need of focus, and there is a need that for people that do these things deliberately, mistakes are mistakes, we know they are mistakes, but there are people, you can't drink and drive by mistake, by the way. So it can happen. So the issue is that people do things deliberately, and therefore there must be consequences. Only when we have got consequences is when we are going to see South Africans really playing their role in all this.
I wanted to deal with three issues which were raised here. I mean, the first one is this 17,000 versus 750. Just to add to what Collins was saying, it's not a helpful one if we average it the way you do, because we are talking of different institutions which these traffic officers belong to. So you'll find that Joburg will have, of the 17,000, 4,000? Exactly. So your metros, you'll find that the metros will take almost 70% of that. And the major part of the country then is no longer the 40 kilometers, it's much more than that. Because if you, let's take of the 17,000, 3,000 are shared by provinces and your small municipalities. The rest is shared by the metros. 12,000 is metros. So basically 5,000 is shared by the rest of the country. So that's therefore the figures, it's no longer 40 kilometers, much, much more than that. That's the one issue. The second one is around the general comments. I want to raise this one as an important point for the committee, that traffic safety is a partnership of all social stakeholders. I think we need to desist from this argument that what is government doing? We're not going to address. If you talk about road construction, you can measure whether government is effective or not in road construction, because that's our principal mandate. Building schools, traffic safety is a shared responsibility. In Colin's presentation, unfortunately there are no page numbers, but it talks about subcommittees, the five pillars and so on. For me, when we measure this thing, we need to measure it that way, and the committee needs to help us in doing that. That unless if you talk about road infrastructure, all state institutions at all levels, the three tiers, have a core responsibility in road construction. Public transport is not only your bus operators. You can see now, because of the economic conditions and so on, we are all seeing that they are under investing in maintenance of buses. So we can have 100,000 traffic cops out there, but the reality of the situation is that the buses, yes, you can see them moving, but they are not maintained properly. So, no, that's the point I'm trying to make, is that if the bus is there, you can see it, you can stop it on the road. It's one man is 2 years old or 3 years old or 5 years old. It has all the elements. But because of the under maintenance, the core elements of maintenance they're doing it. You can't see it when you it's much more deeper than that. The drivers they have, okay, because of the all sorts of things. I mean, there was a report I think 10 years or 5 years ago around the problems around the truck drivers and all of sorts of things. The fact that there are few of them now. So you no longer have this rigorous training. They will have the licenses. They will have even, what is it, the PD, what is it, this thing? They will have it. But historically, you go to any bus company, the big bus companies, they will have additional training, highly specialized training. Those things are no longer happening. They are undercutting in investments. You can't pick it up through an enforcement. You can't. He has the PDP, he has a license, he has 5 years or 10 years. But the kind of training they used to have is no longer happening. So it's a social, is a societal problem, this matter, and therefore, this thing. For me, we are moving forward because we are beginning to build serious partnerships of all social stakeholders, and we are beginning to see. Whether civil society or the private sector, taking this matter seriously, and we need to encourage that. I'm not saying that we don't have certain responsibilities as government, but if we are going to simply reduce this matter to we are only monitoring what government is doing. We're not going to address this problem. It's unlike your housing, your RDP, your road construction, where the government is expected to deliver on all of those things. Road safety, as a society, if we don't have proper partnership, let's forget about the 14,000. I know. I mean, before I came to national government, I was in KwaZulu-Natal in the provincial department. When we were known as the most advanced in terms of road safety. Collins, as was saying, now KwaZulu-Natal is actually the worst. And what's the problem? The problem is that when we implemented the program in those years, it was not a comprehensive and coordinated effort. So we might invest a lot in terms of adding traffic officers and so on, but the road construction program is lagging behind. Okay, so those are the kinds of things. You can see most of those towns there in terms of development, they're declining, like Pietermaritzburg. Economically is declining, and therefore most of the people are unemployed now. The many people are drinking and so on. It has all sorts of things. Unless we address all of these things, then we'll have a problem. That's the second point. Coming to this specific issue around funding and so on, it's linked to the second point. We know that there are challenges in the RTMC. We know that part of the problem is historical, the fact that before the team, we sent Collins there and put together a team, you were actually not helping the situation by putting in more money. It's like you'll be resourcing all those sorts of problems which were there, and the situation therefore led to RTMC falling off the main as one of the main funding or agencies we require funding. That has to change, and we're all acknowledging that fact, and we are engaging as we talk now. When in my view, it's a combination of giving more mandate to RTMC because they have the potential of raising their generating revenues, but at the same time, in the transition, find ways of how we can And we have had these discussions with Treasury to try and resolve this problem. And I really believe that we will be able to resolve. It might not be tomorrow and so on, but there's an effort. And we have raised this matter with the minister quite sharply that he needs to politically champion this matter in our discussions with Treasury and so on. So that issue is on the table. We're trying to resolve it. Again, the legislative issues, as we're talking about, my view is that one of the critical areas which we need to focus on is how do we help RTMC generate its own revenue on top of what this government can do. So that's what the mandate for me should be addressing that. And as we speak now, the minister has asked us to look at all of these options and then come back to him and to look at them. That is at the broad level to respond to some of these. But I think the issue is that this slide says, let's continue to build these partnerships and institutionalize these partnerships. And that's the only way we can reduce the 14,000. It should be a shared responsibility. Every single citizen, on top of this, the road safety councils, every citizen must take up this thing, like we have taken up the issue of HIV/AIDS, you know, because we could not have addressed, and as you can see, the advances we're making in the HIV/AIDS space, we could not have done that if people were looking at government to deliver on this thing. It's a collective and a shared responsibility.
Thank you, DG. I understand that there was an apology that was tendered earlier on, and I said to the members, this by four will be out, and I know that there are those that have pressing matters, because normally our meetings are in the morning of today, but because of the joint sitting, we could not have it. We are about very soon. Any other question that you feel will die if you cannot ask it? Otherwise, DG and Mr. Collins, you have responded to us very sufficiently, and I think where there are still grey areas, I think it's work in progress. That's what you are saying, and we will monitor all that, also that, especially on the legislation. We look also into those shortcomings where we need to strengthen the arm of yourselves to execute your mandate. The question of the funding is always a challenge, and one colleague was saying the tools of trade. We'll look into that. Otherwise, if there are no more questions and people are very happy, I want to thank the department for having briefed us. Collins, you have job well done so far. Once again, you've not failed us. One thing I like about yourself is your honesty. You tell us the honest truth. You don't need to go out and scratch your head. And also the DG, with his response, is very clear. And we appreciate that, DG and your team. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish to thank you once again to making this meeting a success. Hope to see you in our next meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you also to yourselves.